Hello and welcome to the APM podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Body for the Project Profession. My name is Mike Hine, and I'm the online editor of APM's Project Journal, and I'll be hosting today's episode. In 2022, our podcast guests have shared their advice and experiences on everything from putting telescopes into space to discovering sunken ships at the bottom of the Antarctic Sea. As the year draws to a close, we thought it would be worthwhile taking a look back at some of the lessons we have learned in 2022. So, in this episode, we'll be collating some of our favourite highlights from episodes you may have missed earlier in the year. We've got insights from NASA, a former cabinet minister, and a BBC television presenter to share with you. Proof, if ever it was needed, that the reach of projects and project management grows ever wider. Before we kick off, we'd like to give a shout out to you, the listeners. Thank you for your continued support throughout 2022. We'll be back in the new year with much more content, so keep your eye out for future episodes wherever you get your podcasts. So, without further ado, let's take a look back at some of the highlights of an action-packed 2022. One consistent theme within project management is change, and how to bring people with you as a project leader. In June, we published a podcast about the people side of change management, which featured Joe Stanford, Head of Corporate Portfolio Office at Health Education England. As well as discussing the importance of role modelling and psychological safety, Joe shared her advice on how to get buy-in from stakeholders to make change happen, and explained why it is critical to start with why.
It really all needs to be underpinned with why are we doing it? And people won't buy into a process. They won't buy into a financial element or a particular, way of doing something. You know, you say, oh, well, we need to do this differently. What they buy into is a sense of purpose. They buy into a cause or a belief or a sense of belonging. So the starting point with yourself and with your team is why. Why are you doing this? What's the purpose of it? What's the aim of it? What is it that you are going to achieve? Because people will rally to a cause and they'll say, yes, that's something I believe in. That's something. And it's an emotional response. It's something personal. And when you're starting out with this, you've got to have a really clear sense of why. Why is it important? Why is it going to make a difference? What's the impact it's going to have both on the world, on your customer base, or what's the value to them and to you in doing it? By setting the why, you can bring people together to help to shape the how and the what. And if you've got that ultimately that keeps you connected, that you have that ultimate cause, that we're going to work on this, this is a really important thing. This is why. It helps you get past the individual conflicts that you might have where people are wedded to particular ways of working or particular, what they want to do or particular ideas. Because if you can bring people back to the thing that joined them together in the first place, which is the why are we doing this, it helps to get beyond the individual and to keep people focused. And therefore, it becomes not a personal thing if your particular idea isn't followed or that particular way of working isn't going to be the one that we take. If you keep people focused on the why, and then you set your measures and outcomes linked to that why, and how do we know we've achieved that? That's the thing for me that is really critical in terms of setting the team up to start with, the team dynamics. But also they're going to go out with conviction and with passion and with purpose when they talk to stakeholders and customers and the end sort of users. And they're going to take that passion and commitment and then going to infect others with it. They're going to infuse that. And that's what gets people to join in. That's what gets people to go on the journey, is that sense of belief and belonging and wanting to be a part of something.
Many of us have just celebrated Christmas 2022. But last year, December the 25th, was a particularly exciting day for scientists, engineers and project professionals at NASA, due to the long-awaited launch of the James Webb Space Telescope. The telescope gives humanity a new eye in the sky, with infrared sensors that will peer into the farthest reaches of the cosmos to observe the universe's first galaxies, reveal the birth of planets and stars, and look for exoplanets with the potential for life. Back in March, the podcast spoke to Bill Oakes, project manager for the James Webb Space Telescope, who is based at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, USA. As well as giving us a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to lead a team at NASA, Bill shared his perspective on what makes a great project manager and gave advice on how to handle complex projects.
When you talk about project management, I mean, every project manager, whether you're within NASA or wherever you're probably working, you kind of have your own style and technique. And one of the things you need to do is to understand within that style and technique your strengths and weaknesses. Because none of us are perfect, so I cannot sit there and tell you I'm the perfect project manager. I got strengths across everything you need to. You need to recognize where your weaknesses are and then build upon it. I was a good engineer, and notice how I said was. There are many project managers who think they're still the best engineer out there. and then that takes away from your management skills and your ability to be a project manager. So I learned a lot about, you know, you need to be able to listen to people. I always tell folks, one of the number one things I say is you need to have a bartender's ear. You need to be able to listen yeah. like a bartender listens. You are the chief risk mitigation person on the project. I mean, you may have risk managers and other engineers, but you're the one that makes those decisions at some point.
What advice would you give to project managers or project leaders around who are working on complex projects? What have been the main lessons you've learned working on a project like this?
Oh, work closely with your team. You know, the communication aspects of it. Listen to your team. Find the folks that you really trust. I mean, you need to be able to trust the folks that are working for you direct, that are your direct reports. And you build that just by communicating with them and trusting the skill set that they have. But that also comes down to understanding the skills that they have. Not everybody is perfect for every job. If you find that somebody has been misplaced in a position, it doesn't mean you have to get rid of them off the project. You may say, hey, there's something over here that's better suited for your skill set. Get them involved with that. Get them interested in that. And then you bring another person into that job that may have the better skill set for that position. And that's one of the things I talk about to folks all the time. You know, you start out with a project organization, but as you move through the life cycle of that project, you're going to need to tweak that organization depending upon where you are in that life cycle to ensure you have the right people in the right jobs, that you have the right organizational structure for that phase of the project. So that's always important from a project manager to kind of maybe once a year take a look at where you are with your organization and do I need to make any changes from a structure standpoint or moving some folks around to really take advantage of their skill sets.
Moving from the world of science and technology to the UK public sector, our next podcast highlight comes from the conversation between former Cabinet Minister, the Right Honourable Justine Greening, and APM Chief Executive Professor Adam Bodison. Justine shared her experience as a senior minister in several government departments and reflected on how well understood the project profession is within the higher ranks of the civil service. Since leaving government, Justine has continued to be a strong advocate for social mobility, and her podcast interview explored how the project profession fits into the goal of increasing social mobility in the UK. We highly recommend you check out that episode in full.
Do you think politicians and civil servants know enough about the project profession and the value it can add to their careers?
Not even remotely enough, no. It's crucial because you've got to bear in mind for our democratic system, you know, it works by having people elected and they are, as it were, lay people. They've probably got a specialism in some kind of area they worked in before Parliament, but then they're put into running departments. And so, you know, often the challenge is you are literally running those departments. And yet I was lucky in the sense that I'd worked in some big, larger organisations as a finance person. I guess if you're in finance or project management, you're probably relatively numerate and you know what you're looking for in terms of how to check if things are on track and what management information you'd need. And I think there's a bit of a gap there, definitely for politicians, on the nuts and bolts of their own skill set in order to be successful. And then I guess within the civil service, the sort of sexy part of civil service has been all the policy development, when actually increasingly it really needs to shift to be much more who's great at delivering projects on the ground successfully, because there's no point having the best policy in the world if you can't deliver it, then it won't come to anything.
We've got some APM members, of course, who will be in some of those departments which are a bit behind the curve. What advice would you give to them in terms of how they could help to shift the dial within their own department?
I think it's having a consistent approach across departments on project development and delivery, and speaking with one voice. So, for example, I think the government finance organisation across government had increasingly learned to work collectively, and did work collectively, on what good looked like, what good process looked like, how to develop business cases. And, you know, it might all sound a bit bonkers. You know, of course you'd expect government and civil service departments to develop strong business cases, but that isn't always the case. And as you said, Adam, some departments are better than others. I would actually say the best business cases I had were when I was at the Department for International Development, mainly because there was so much scrutiny on every single penny of spend. Actually, that had led to the department really kicking the tires on absolutely everything before it was ever signed off. By contrast, when I went into education, you know, much less business case development per se, but a real need for it, because if you're going to compete, for example, with the Department for Transport on investment, say, in pupil referral units, and you want that investment and you're making the case it should go into that rather than fixing more potholes, then you do need a business case approach that's really bolted down. And it's what I always expected to see as a finance person. I mean, if you don't have that business case, and this is what we really did in DFID, you haven't really ever got that parameter, that kind of game plan against which to then compare progress. And, you know, it's absolutely crucial if you're going to have strong project management that the project itself is obviously specced up well at the very, very beginning.
We are always looking to interview guests who can provide a fresh perspective on the world of projects and project management. So we were delighted this year to secure an interview with veteran journalist Evan Davis, presenter of BBC4's daily news programme PM, and former main presenter of Newsnight and the Today programme. Evan is also well known as the presenter of Dragon's Den, and on Radio 4 he hosts a weekly business discussion programme called The Bottom Line. In his podcast interview, Evan gave an informed outsider's perspective on the importance of projects to the economic, political, and cultural life of a country. Here he is talking about how major projects are perceived, and the reputation of the profession among the general public.
I think we should demand of the people planning projects that they have a high bar for public value, that we do not want to waste scarce construction resources, public money, and the design and other capabilities of our country on white elephants. So we should be demanding. And that means cost-benefit analyses and all the conventional tools of, you know, appraisal of projects are absolutely important, and society can't give up on those. And the Treasury is right to say to people, we're not just going to throw money at stuff because it looks great and the like. We need to have some vision for the shape of the nation. And sometimes the cost-benefit analysis, adding up the time savings of the kind of the existing customers on a train, for example, may not capture the benefits of something 100 years hence or 50 years hence. So I think you have to be careful about being too accountancy focused on it.
Do you think project managers are fully understood and fully appreciated in this country, or do you think they just get it in the neck?
Now, I don't think project managers have a bad image. I don't think the public have a very clear idea about project managers. I think what happens is the public get annoyed when they see Crossrail was meant to open in 2018 and is opening in 2022. And so that's the negative. But the truth is the public swoon over some of the great achievements of the project managers, and they love it when they go right. And I think what you really see out there is a kind of a complex amalgam of different feelings and views about projects. We hate it when they're being built and there's disruption. We love it when we walk through the swanky new railway station or travel on the fancy new train. So I broadly speaking, I don't think they do have a bad image, project managers. And in as far as it's a complicated love-hate relationship, as I think it is, I think it's probably deserved. You know, the public are entitled to say, you said this would be delivered and it wasn't, and we're a bit fed up with that.
One major story from this year was the long-delayed opening of London's Elizabeth Line, otherwise known as Crossrail. As one of the largest transportation programmes anywhere in the world, Crossrail had a high profile from the outset, but often found itself in the headlines for the wrong reasons. Mark Wilde took over as CEO in 2018, at a time of highly publicised budget and deadline overruns, but successfully steered the programme to its much-celebrated opening this year, before stepping down. Having successfully turned around such a complex and fraught programme, Mark was ideally placed to tell the APM podcast why he thinks so many major programmes are late and over budget. Here he is talking to Project Journal contributor Andrew Saunders.
Is it inevitable that big projects will always be late and over budget?
Contemporary perspective, if you look at the research from Oxford particularly, you will find that, yes, the vast majority of major programmes around the world are late and over budget. I think three big things are happening in the world now that are really significant in major programmes. Firstly, they're getting bigger. Crossrail used to be the biggest in Europe and the fifth biggest in the world. Now, Crossrail wouldn't get in the top 10 globally, and it wouldn't get in the top three in Europe. So projects getting bigger. There is a massive rise of digitization, massively. And of course, there's a huge drive to net zero. Now, to me, those dynamics on top of a situation that you've pointed out that they're all late anywhere, really calls to change about how you manage these programs, because I think they are so big and complex now, a new approach. And the kind of the big learning which we can get onto out of Crossrail is maybe it's a new approach. But to your point, yeah, every major program in the world seems to have problems. Fundamental lesson in Crossrail was setting a singular end date and quite a visible public funding envelope. They said December 18 and 14.8 billion years in advance and made that very, very public. The big learning out of Crossrail is do not set singular end dates and envelopes. Think about more windows of uncertainty.
That concludes our roundup of the year's highlights. But of course, there are many more powerful lessons for project professionals in our back catalogue of podcasts. So why not go back and have a listen over this festive period? We also want to hear your stories. What did you learn in 2022? And what goals and challenges are you anticipating in 2023? We're always keen to hear your thoughts at apmpodcast@thinkpublishing.co.uk. If you've enjoyed the content we've put out this year, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for your continued support, and we look forward to bringing you more episodes in 2023. This podcast has been brought to you by APM, the chartered body for the project profession. Find out more at apm.org.uk.
At Association for Project Management, we know your most important project is your career. But as a project manager, it's not always easy to make Project Me happen. That's where our membership can help. We offer exclusive training, qualifications and learning resources to keep your development on track. Join our 35,000 members and become part of the only chartered membership body for the project profession. Open up your future at apm.org.uk.